Hello, everyone. Welcome today to this episode of the Risky Mindset Podcast. Today, we have Tox on the line. She runs Tox Inc. and Tox Talks. So basically, it's a speaking and writing firm that specializes in keynote and motivational speaking. She's got a publishing company as well, and then she does some poetic copywriting. We're going to get into some of that today. But first of all, thank you for joining me on the call today.
Thank you so much for having me, Tokwa. I'm excited to have this conversation with you.
Yeah, welcome to the podcast. All right, so let's start with your background. Right, tell us about how you grew up and how you want to know what shaped you into becoming the person you are today.
Yeah, so I grew up as a Nigerian Canadian. So my mom, dad, and sister are born in Nigeria. I'm born in Canada, but I would say I grew up with the Nigerian culture very deeply rooted in my home. And then everything outside of my home was Canadian, so much so that my first language is actually Yoruba. My parents made a decision very early on that anybody who could speak Yoruba was not allowed to speak English to my sister and I, because we're going to learn English when we start school anyway. So I couldn't speak English. All I could speak was Yoruba. And I think truly understanding the culture, being that deeply surrounded by the culture, and then also understanding the language and the nuances really made me very culturally grounded. Till this point, I can't even speak English to Yoruba adults because English doesn't have as many respectful words as Yoruba. And I think really finding the balance of my Nigerian side and my Canadian side and blending them and sometimes being afraid to blend them has really defined who I am. As a kid, my parents would call me Tox or Tokumbo, and outside my friends would call me Fatima. And if I saw a family member outside who called me Tox and my friends were like, what did they call you? It was very traumatic. So yeah. I think learning how to love both parts of me and give them both space really helped me learn how to accept myself. I've always had extremely supportive family members around me. So anything I wanted to do, they were also super supportive. I did sports. I know how to sew. I was learning the talking drum at one point. I had a baking business. I think the ability to try whatever I wanted to try growing up has really helped me with the boldness that I use to do the same thing in my business now.
Yeah, I think that's really admirable from your parents, right? Because if you think about it, like, I have kids as well, too. And I think one thing that always bugs me is that they can't speak Yoruba. Mm-hmm. And it's like something that kind of I have to like struggle with as well. I actually signed them up for Yoruba classes. Like,
oh, great.
Yeah, but then that's not going good. They're like, I'm just playing around, wasting my money. But anyway. what I was going to say is like, it's good because then you can have that grounded sense of identity, right?
Who
you are, and then know that, okay, you know what, this is where I'm from. But then also but how does that work having these two sides to yourself, right? You know, the Canadian side, the Nigerian side. How does that help with your identity?
It helps because of what you said, right? Like, I am both, you know, being a Black woman in Canada, when people ask you where you're from and you say you're Canadian, they ask, where are you really from? You know, and it's a microaggression, but at the same time, I know that I'm not fully Canadian. And the fact that I have such deep connections to my motherland, my father's land, through knowledge, through language, through food, helps me feel whole. Because if I'm in the Canadian perspective, the Nigerian part is on my shoulder, so I'm never fully here. If I'm in the Nigerian, the Canadian's on my shoulder, so I'm never fully there. But the fact that I can embrace both parts and really be in the middle has helped me be firm in who I am. And now that like Afrobeats and like Ashaken stuff is like blowing up, the fact that I understand everything they're saying is also a win. So like the fact that the culture is finally being accepted just makes it even better. Like, I have a lot of friends who are like, I want you to teach me Yoruba. Whereas growing up, that wasn't necessarily the friend group I had. They didn't care for that stuff. But now it's like, I keep seeing the value more and more as I get older. And I'm just so grateful that they did that for us.
That's really good. It's good to see that come right, like full circle, where people actually wanted to find out about Afrobeats about. And again, also, like, I don't like that question, where are you from originally? You know, it's like someone needs to, like, kind of educate people. But then I guess it's more about curiosity sometimes, that to that I kind of approach it. So let's talk about so you starting, first of all, Talks Inc., right? So what inspired you to start Talks Incorporated?
I started it actually Feb I incorporated it officially May 17th, 2019. So it's about to be 4 years in a few weeks. I just wanted something of my own. I quit my job in finance because I wanted to start my own business. And I was like, what better name for the corporation than Tokes Inc.? And prior to me quitting my job and everything, I was known as Fatima, which is my first name, which is the more Canadian English aligned name, although it's Arabic. And just being, it was just really, I guess, resistance to being anything that I didn't want to be. I just wanted to switch everything up. And I wanted a company where I could do things my way, where I could share the things I wanted to share in the way I wanted to share it and just be unapologetic. And at a point, I was a little bit like concerned, should I attach my name to it? Because then your face and your identity is completely attached to the business. But I'm like, yeah, I should, because I am the it factor within this whole dynamic that's going to make it great. So they need to know me, because I'm not going to be a separate entity from my life's work, because my life's work is par a part of my life and I'm my life.
Yeah, that's true. So, like, I've spoken to a couple of entrepreneurs on this show where they have that I don't know what the word is, maybe insecurity, or maybe like they don't want to be the face of the business, right? They want to be able to, like, just get something out there, but I don't want to be out there myself, right? Tell us about how was that for you? What was the reason behind that hesitation to say, you know what, should I be the person on the front of this?
I think it's just responsibility, right? If I'm the face of my business, anywhere I am, I'm representing my business. If somebody annoys me at the airport and I'm yelling at them and I go viral, that is attached to my business, you know? But like something about anonymity is that it gives you freedom to behave however you want and you're not held to account. Similar to why the internet trolls on Twitter and places like that can say rubbish, because they know that they're not attached personally to the things they do. So there's that level of freedom, right? But I truly believed that it's my res if I'm doing this, if I'm going to do it, I need to do it all the way. And part of that is putting myself out there, attaching myself to my brand, because a lot of my brand is also my story. And I can't put a story without a face that attaches to the story. So it was just the best way to go.
Yeah, true. All right, so now let's talk about when you started Talks Inc. So what did it start out as, right? Did you have all these multi facets of the business, or what was the first thing that you started with?
So prior to starting Tokes Inc. officially, I had a little baking business called Treats by Tokes. And I realized that I wanted to create a business, Tokes Inc., that attached to every part of what I did. So initially, I had Tokes Inc. as the major, underneath it, Tokes Talks, which is what I go by now. Treats by Tokes, and then I even had Tailored by Tokes because I learned how to sew and I was like, maybe I'm gonna start sewing clothing for people. And everything was the same logo and branding. This is how I really started. But then I realized that I'm not gonna be doing the baking as much. I'm not gonna really, I don't care to be a seamstress for anyone other than myself. So it just became Tokes Inc. And the way I wanted to identify myself on all social media platforms was Tokes Talks, because I didn't feel like Tokes Inc. was personal, but I am Tokes, I talk. So it just kind of works.
So you have 180 episodes on your podcast, right? So tell us about that journey, right? So, like, starting the podcast, first of all, was the podcast a way for you to let the world know about your, public speaking engagements and everything? So tell us about why you started Talks Talk, and
Yes.
what topics you talk about on the podcast as well.
So I started Tokes Talks for that exact reason, or the Tokes Talks podcast, because I felt like I have this gift, I have this talent of speaking, but nobody knows me. So I need them to know who I am and know how I speak. So much so that there was a job I applied for recently, a contract position. And after I got it, someone actually told me, one of the hiring managers, that they went on my podcast and listened to the way I spoke. And you could imagine if I was saying dangerous and rubbish things, that would have really been how I would have ruined my opportunity. But on the podcast, I tend to center my discussions around business relationships and personal development because these are the spaces where I feel I am well versed. So business entrepreneurship, the ups and downs of it, the intricacies of that, relationships like romantic relationships, interpersonal relationships between friends, and also just building relationships with community, and then personal development, becoming that person you want to be, getting that mindset right, financial development as a part of that, confidence as a part of that, mindset as a part of that. And I just share my thoughts about all of these things in a space where I feel like it's safe to discuss and where people can just find me and listen. So there's so many topics, like there's something truly for everyone because I've kind of touched on everything, especially in the span of over 4 years of doing that now.
Yeah, I mean, I also see that the podcast is like it's kind of like the new business card, right? So where people can actually find out about you, even if you're working in a 9 to 5 day job as well too. I mean, having a podcast or having some content online also helps people to see. It's more of like personal branding, right?
Yeah.
So would you say that, like, if you can expand on that a little bit, would you say what is the importance of having that personal brand and being able to get people to understand and know what your skills are?
Yeah, it's exactly that. It's that resume, right? Because when people are looking, sometimes they're looking at a lot of different people and a lot of different options. And before they get to you personally as a person, the internet is there. So they want to see what you're doing, what you're talking about, what you represent, and see if it is a fit or a match for whatever it is that they need you for. And I found that even before I started booking a lot of speaking gigs, because I had my podcast as well as my book, I was able to ask for higher rates than my peers who were technically at the same beginning level as me, because I had done all of these other things that worked as social proof in my favor.
Yeah, exactly. That's really good. So now let's can you tell us about the challenge? First of all, you quit your job in finance, you said, right? To start the business. What was that? What was that transition like? Was it scary? Was it, were you like happy to get out there? Like, just tell us about your, how that felt for you.
I was very happy to get out.
Okay. It seems like there was no remorse. You were like, I'm out of here.
No, there was no remorse at all when I was leaving. So I was working in wealth management, and when I was leaving, I actually told my bosses, like, I'm leaving to come back as your client. That was the energy I was on because I had that much faith in my ability to do what I wanted to do. And to be honest, so my educational background is psychology and economics, as well as public administration and public law. So very wide spreading educational background. And I always wanted to work on Bay Street, which is like downtown Toronto financial district. And when I was there, I was like, it just looks shiny on the outside. When I was on the inside of it, I'm like, this isn't really what I wanted. As well, there wasn't a lot of diversity in the space I was in. There wasn't a lot of women because it's a male dominated space. And then on top of that, on like a floor of, I think, 150 people, I was like one of like maybe two black people. And I was also very young, like relative, right? I was 26 at the time that I quit. And I believe I started at 24. And the person closest in age to me on my team was a decade older than me. So being there, I learned a lot, right? Like access to wealth, knowledge, seeing what the rich are doing. And it showed me a lot. But at the same time, I knew that I fully didn't feel like I belonged in that space long term. I don't believe anything is wasted though, because what I learned about running a business, taxes, all of the back end, how you can invest as an entrepreneur, and all of those things, I would not have had that knowledge if not for that space. But same time, you know, you start to feel when you've overstayed your welcome somewhere, like when your purpose is no longer attached to it. So I became so distracted when I would go to work. I'm just like, again, we're doing this. So, and I would find myself writing poetry at work. And I'm like, these people are going to sack me because I'm not here for poetry. I'm here to be doing this work. And it got to a point where I was like, I need to leave, because if I keep staying and my work ethic starts to decline, they're going to get rid of me. So when I made that decision to finally leave, I made it like 2 months in advance of the time that I actually left. It just was pure conviction, and it felt so right. And I knew that the relationship I had built with them, in the event that I wasn't successful, a job was still available for me. Although I never even thought of that as a safety net, it was there and available for me, but I needed to just go off on my own and see what I could do.
It's good that you didn't take the safety net, right? You basically went out all out and then did what you wanted to do. So let's talk about the growth now. So now you started the business. Now you're about to start booking speaking gigs, right? I want to know about the growth from your first speaking gigs to the ones that you have right now. So like, how much did you charge? Were you like, was it scary to actually give like an amount and say, you know what, this is how much I charge for my gigs? Tell us about how that felt for you.
Oh my gosh, it was absolutely terrifying, because when you don't know the market, you're going into something. And at the time, I didn't really have people in my life who were professional speakers, so I didn't even know what to ask for. And in truth, a few of the people who I met through some of my mentors, they introduced me to people who were speakers. A lot of them were giving me information that, although it worked for them, I realized it wasn't for me. One, so much so, like, went as far as to say that because I was just starting, I should just do free work for 5 years to get my name out there. And I'm like, is my name out there going to pay my bills? Because 5 years is a very, very, very long time. And I do a lot of work in diversity, equity, and inclusion. I had a professor, which that educational background makes sense for her advice. She said, before you can do DEI work, you need to go do your master's. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm not spending 2 years in school and another like $70,000 when I don't have money, you know? Yeah. So I just had to go out there. And luckily, I'm blessed to have friends who, when I told them, hey, this is what I'm doing, they sent opportunities my way. Like, I had friends in the educational system who would be like, we're looking for a speaker for this event. And they would let me know, this is the budget we got. So they would tell me the budget so that I'm not in a situation of lowballing myself or maybe even going so high that I would lose the opportunity because I just kind of self-rejected with my crazy prices. So in the beginning, a lot of it was like nonprofit and education, like the public sector. And what I've learned is that public sector and non-for-profit, their budgets for these things are a lot smaller than corporations. So a talk that I could do at a school where maybe they'd pay me $1,000 for an hour, outside of a school, if a corporation were to want me to do the same thing, I can charge $5,000 and above for the same thing. And even learning that, right? Because there are some times where I would go into those corporate spaces and lowball myself. And you know what? When they don't negotiate the price, you know you went too low. When they're like, great. So now I know. And also, I'm confident in my work. I know that if you're going to put me on that stage, I'm going to do excellent work. So it's made it easier for me to ask in boldness, because there are people out here getting paid $30,000 and flown out for first class to speak for 15 minutes on a panel. I know that I'm able to do that work. So now I ask for what I want. And I also know that the trade-off of my time, like, it's okay to not be known as the cheap person and to reject a lot of things, because the reputation of being cheap is not one that's easy to get rid of. And then you could just kind of block yourself from more opportunities because of that.
Yeah, true. Did you have any help though? Like you're talking about mentors, like in showing you this is probably how you should go about it, getting the gigs, charging for this, and then, you know, positioning myself to be the person that they want.
In the first, I'd say 2.5 years, no, because I started off in 2021, February, I'm sorry, 2019, February, quitting my job. And one of the first things I did, besides starting the podcast, was also write my book. And I
that was just like, right in the middle of COVID, right?
COVID started 2020, which is the problem.
Oh, I was, yeah, you're right.
Okay, yes, okay. I was starting to build the momentum. My book came out October 2019. And I was like, okay, I have a book. So now let me do book talks. Like, so I don't even need to do a random keynote on a topic people don't know me for. I can take this book out, do talks about the book, read the poetry. And as soon as I planned all of that, COVID hit and like the world shut down. So I didn't even get an opportunity to really get into that as much as I had wanted to, because the world was closed down. So I didn't really have mentors. All I had were like, I didn't have mentors per se, but I had a lot of sponsors. So friends and people who knew me and liked me and trusted me enough that when an opportunity came that they think fit me, they would put my name in that room, even if they weren't speakers themselves. They just had access. So I had different friends who worked in different areas and sectors of the economy. And when an opportunity would come and they'd say, oh, they're looking for a speaker for maybe Black History Month, or they're looking for a woman's like International Women's Day speaker, they would put me onto those opportunities. So people vouched for me. And every time they did, I did great work that then continued to open doors. But in the beginning, I really did not have anyone to look up to in person, maybe virtually. Like I would follow people on social media who did the type of work that I did and just read and see what they're doing and use that as inspiration and like a goalpost. But someone who I would talk to regularly, no.
Understood. Okay, so tell us about what makes it worth it, right? Some memorable times, right, during your business that makes all the hustle, the work, the hours that you put in make it worth it.
Yeah. The first one that I'd say was when I physically published my first book, Through My Brown Eyes, holding the book in my hands when it came in the mail, I was like, I'm literally holding the fruits of my labor. This is actually mind-blowing. And to just say you're going to do something and then do it and then see it, it was just like this confidence boost that I can do the things I say I want to do, because if nothing else, this right here. Another one was, I'd say, in my podcasting era, I was very much, you have to record a podcast every single week. And sometimes I'd be like, I don't want to do this. And there was this one episode, I can't remember it, but I remember the feeling after recording it. I was kind of just dejected. And my podcast is not getting views. This kind of sucks. Why am I still doing this? And right after that, someone sends me a message and said, that episode was exactly what I needed to hear. Thank you so much for putting it out there. And that really changed my perspective, because I was looking at success as the numbers, hundreds of thousands of people. But if hundreds of thousands of people are looking at your stuff and it's not impacting them, that truly won't make my heart happy. But the fact that one person said that what I shared was able to shift their perspective, that was just it. And I'd say a third one was June 2020 last year, June 10th, when I paid off my $30,000 of debt that I had accrued from 2019 from quitting without savings or a backup plan. So I paid off that last little bit and I was debt free. And it was just this relief. And last year was also my first six-figure year. So it was like, you said you were going to do this. You saw it through and you've done it. It was just all of these things that feel good to me are just the things that confirm. Like anything that confirms that I'm on the right track, that I'm helping people and I'm doing the right thing, they're always the best memories.
Yeah, I speak to, so more entrepreneurs on here that actually say the same thing that I just shared, is that impact that actually makes them feel motivated to continue, right? Because if no one is being impacted by your work, you might as well just give up, right? So it's definitely very understandable, right? So what about some lessons that you've learned since you've launched your business?
I think the main lesson, one of the biggest lessons that I learned was in 2021, a friend of mine, or end of 2020, a friend of mine had told me, he's like, I think you should look into applying for jobs. And I was like, don't disrespect me. Like,
you should tell me what I should do.
Don't disrespect me. I'm my own boss. Like, you know, that ego. And he's like, he told me, he's like, there are certain things that you're doing that you could be paid by a company to do, and it will help you learn. And I looked at it and I was like, you're annoying. But at the same time, I had to sit back and really take in the validity of what he said. And in 2021, I actually applied for a position at a bank that was an inclusive leadership consultant. So it was a 1-year contract. Mm-hmm. And I looked at the role and it was just so aligned. It's like, you're going to be doing consulting with leaders. So it was everything from their board members to like their directors. So C-level senior directors. And it was a net new position. There was going to be some coaching components. And I looked at it and I was like, this is for me, you know? And that role, I took it for that 1 year. I was unable to renew the contract with them because my life became so busy after it ended. But that role directly allowed me to be able to start making $1,000 an hour.
Okay.
In the work, you know?
Tell us about that.
Yeah. How did that help you make $1,000 an hour? So prior to that, like the first consulting gig I ever really did was $180 an hour. I was consulting with a major company in the city, doing some diversity, equity, and inclusion consulting with them. And then I went into this role with this bank soon after that. And the role with the bank was just so open. It was net new. And not only that, the VP that I was working directly with was very open. So initially it was supposed to be primarily facilitation, but I'm like, I have a coaching background. So can we add a coaching component to this where I offer the leaders an opportunity to do one-on-one coaching after we do the main facilitation? And as I was adding all of these things to my role, they were adding to my resume. Okay, so by the time I got out of the role, I had just done high level coaching, facilitation, training with one of the top 5 banks in the country and their leaders. So that social proof was able to skyrocket my ability to demand whatever I wanted from the market. Wow. And when I look back, if I had not heard that advice from my friend, I would have not even been looking to see if there was a role that I could do temporarily that could align. And I'm not saying I wouldn't have gotten to where I am today, but it would have been a much slower journey of proving myself versus being paid to bolster my resume and then come out on the other side and over 5x-ing my hourly rate by being at a company for a year where I was making good money as well and still able to continue my business. So just looking at that, it really helped me because sometimes you think, I don't want to step back, but some steps that we take back help us to go forward much faster, kind of like a slingshot, right? You got to pull it back. And then when you let go, that momentum is way faster than if you had just stayed where you thought you were.
Well, that's actually insightful, right? Because in the end, if you actually ignored what he said, you probably wouldn't. I mean, as you said, right, you would have been where you were at some point, but maybe not as quickly as it did.
Exactly.
Well, tell us about the book, because you're talking about that Through My Brown Eyes, right? So what is the book about and why did you write it?
So Through My Brown Eyes is a poetry book divided into four sections about life, love, culture, and self. And I've always been a poet. It's something that I've always loved doing. When I was about 8 years old, I wanted to work for Hallmark. That was my ultimate job. Like, I wanted to work for Hallmark writing Hallmark cards because I've loved poetry so much. And when I was quitting my job, I was looking at the things I already had that I could start doing. And I had journals full of poetry and I was like, it's time for me to do something with these. And what the book really does is takes you on a journey of these perspectives, life, love, culture, and self through the eyes of me, a Black Nigerian Canadian woman in transition. And a lot of some of the poems are also translated into Yoruba to really tie back into that culture because Yoruba is so rich in words and proverbs. And I thought that that was a very necessary part. And that book also opened so many doors because the topics that are in that book are very relatable to the Black Canadian experience. And there's not a lot of Black Canadian poets who have like tangible books. So that book has been used in classes in different high schools across the country to actually discuss topics like race, identity, femininity, cultural dynamics, immigration. And it's just opened up so many doors for me. So it's like my baby.
How does that make you feel knowing that your book is actually in classes, being used in schools?
It's
Because that's impact, right? That's what you call impact.
yes, it's mind-blowing. I have a friend as well who's a teacher in Egypt, as well as a family member who works at a university in Nigeria, and both have also put my books in their library. So I've gotten videos of kids in Egypt literally reading my book,
Oh,
and
nice.
it's mind-blowing. I can't believe that the work of my hands could take me that far. I never could have imagined. I've never been to Egypt, but my words are in Egypt, like touching children, and it's just amazing. And I think as I said, it was one of the confirmations, but it's just a reminder that your unique story can be the catalyst to change somebody else's life. And to not do the things you feel compelled to do is not just you holding things in, it's also you being greedy because you're blocking people from having access to these things, and you don't know what your role is as the catalyst to some people's lives. So you can't even afford to hold things back because there are people waiting on you to do that thing that you do.
Yeah, that's something I think we can also learn from this, right? If you have something in you that you are compelled to share, not sharing it is actually basically, as you said, being greedy, right? Not giving that opportunity for other people to be impacted by what it is that you have to share. That's really impressive. All right, so we're coming up to the end of this podcast. It's been really good, but before I let you go, I want to ask one last question. What advice would you give to an aspiring entrepreneur that wants to start their business today?
Know the reason why you want to do it and hold on to that in the moments where it doesn't seem like it makes sense, because it's not always going to be up. But if that purpose and that drive is compelling enough, it'll give you the ability to work through the difficulties that are inevitable to happen because you know that it's going to be worth it in the end.
Yeah, that's really good. It's because in the end, if you don't have that why, you're not gonna, you're basically gonna give up, right? When the down times come, right? So it's really
Exactly.
good. Thank you very much, Tox.
Thank
So if people
you.
want to get your book, if people want to book you for a speaking gig, know about you, where can they find you?
You can find me on ToksTalks.com as well as ToksTalks on all social media. So I have a YouTube channel that I'm really trying to grow. That's where I'm focusing a lot of my energy right now, and it's Tokes Talks as well. My book is available on Amazon, and there's also a link to that on my website. So if you go on my website, it'll direct you to everything else, and it's tokestalks.com.
Thank you very much, Tux, for coming on the show. We
Thank you
appreciate
for
it.
having me.
Thank you.
All right, bye.